goes Lance in the open field. 30, 20, 10, 5. Touchdown! Oh, baby, this kid's pretty good.
You're listening to Bison Report Radio, presented by 24/7 Sports.
The Thunderdome, especially on homecoming, is just not something that you want to allow to get rocking, and they really, really did.
I don't think you could ask for any better. Maybe one more completion to go 11 for 11, but that kid was fun to watch.
Their wing spot is pretty loaded. I mean, you got Jared's going to play. I mean, he's as solid as it gets at the two spot.
Here's your host, publisher of Bison Report, Ross Uglum.
What's up, Bison fans? This is a bonus edition of the Bison Report radio podcast. I am your host, publisher of the Bison Report on 24/7 Sports, Ross Uglum. Signing day is approaching. I believe it's on December 18th, and we've got big-time Bison basketball this weekend and big-time playoff football at the Thunderdome, of course. But we're going to have a little bonus episode for you here, and we're going to do that for two reasons. Number one, on the line, and in just a little bit, I've got Bison former player Ron Dobrovich. Ron was a Bison from 1969 to 1972 and has been writing more of the stat-centric stuff on our site and also writing about the history of NDSU's proud program. And we're really excited to have Ron on the show. And then kind of in contrast to that, we have Trey Lance. And some of you have seen by now the BRTV episode with Trey up on the site, but that is a VIP episode. And we understand that not all of you, though we would love you to be, are VIP members. So to make sure that everybody gets a chance to hear that, we're going to do this bonus show. But if you are a VIP member, check out the video. We've got some highlights cut in. There's some really good stuff there with Trey. So if you get a chance to check out the interview twice, certainly do that. But before any further ado, I've got Ron Dobrovich on the line. Ron, how are you?
I am good. I am actually in Fargo South here. I live in the Dallas area, and Frisco is a stone throw away, and it'd be a great day for a national championship, about 70 degrees and sunny.
Yeah, I'm really hoping one of these years the weather in January will look like that. I'd love to come down early, maybe play some golf. Not always have it be 45 degrees and cloudy for the national championship. But when it's 15 below at home, that's a lot of complaining for no reason, really.
That is true.
For sure. So just kind of wanted to get your background for folks that maybe don't know a ton about Ron Dobrovich. We'd like to kind of figure out what era you played in, maybe what coaches you played for, guys you played with. The success of the program kind of before, after, and during you were there, while you were there. Let us know kind of who Ron Dobrovich is as it relates to Bison football.
Well, it's been a real part of my history, even before I played. My father and an uncle who both were ROTC at North Dakota State, though it was called the North Dakota Agricultural at that time. In the 1930s, played on the Bison football team. My uncle actually played on a team in the mid-30s that lost to the University of Minnesota 6-0. And the U of M was the number one team in the nation at that time. And these tough farm boys and Iron Rangers out of North Dakota gave them all they wanted. When I was a younger kid, North Dakota football stunk, and didn't know much about it just by being in town and going to Agassiz Junior High and then to Fargo South. There was an understanding of North Dakota football, North Dakota State football, and it wasn't even, again, called. It was the Agriculture College. The interest started going up in my junior high years when there was a change. President Lofsgaard brought in Daryl Mudra. Ron Earhart was an assistant coach. And Bucky Nystrom, who went on and is a Hall of Fame Big Ten coach at Michigan State offensive line. And he was brought in specifically to put the name, as they changed it from the Agricultural College to NDSU, on kind of the public view and bring more students in and so forth. And in 1962, the program was 0-10. And then in 63, it went to 3-5. And then in 64, they went 9-1 and then won a bowl game. And I think the first national championship was that year. And as a junior high, that got my attention. I remember sitting around on the TV for watching that bowl game and just how big it was. And I was playing junior high ball. And then 65, they did the same thing. There was a little bit of a drop back in 66. Mudra left. And I think that was Earhart's first year as coach. They lost to San Diego State, who had three NFLers on that team, and the great Don Coryell, the coach, went on to San Diego Charger and NFL fame. Jim Horn, Haven Moses, and Scoggins, two receivers, and this great quarterback, and they kind of did us in a game. I think it was 36-7. 67 then started a string of unbeaten teams, and I was in sophomore in high school, and then between my sophomore and junior years, we hired a new assistant coach at South, a guy named Sam Neese. And Sam he was an offensive tackle at NDSU and a part of that turnaround program. And he just made an indelible mark on my life. And really between my junior and senior year, Sam became the head coach at Fargo South. And I had a pretty good junior year. And Sam was encouraging me to think about college ball and NDSU. And making a long story short, I was all conference, all Eastern Dakota. They didn't have an all state. They had an all Western Dakota conference and an all Eastern, and I made the all Eastern. Shanley High had a big win streak at time, and I played with a number of Sid Sitchie's sons, Joe, Nick, and Mike. All played when I was there at NDSU. And my freshman year, you couldn't play your freshman year, and they didn't redshirt back then, but it was kind of developmental year. And was a backup my sophomore year. We did go to the Camellia Bowl, and as I was explaining to Ross, there's kind of a winning streak or unbeaten streak that gets lost. But during that period of time, I was games 11 through 35, but we had a 35-game unbeaten streak. And the only reason why I was on a winning streak of that long in 71, we opened up the season with a 14-14 tie with Eastern Michigan, which is now an FBS school. And another teammate of note would be Steve Nelson, who went on and was an all-pro linebacker and actually is in their Hall of Fame and was voted a top 10 New England Patriot player. Steve came back. He did color commentary for New England through last year. This was the first time he was able to get back at the former players in Frisco before he wasn't able to. And big Bison fan and just a tremendous player back then and throughout his football career. And Dick Hansen and John Hansen also went to Fargo South, and Dick Central. He was 2 years older. Dick was a big defensive tackle for us. He was athletic. He was an all-state. He had like 38 straight wrestling wins and won a couple straight state titles. He played defensive tackle for the Bison, but he went on and to the NFL and started as a a tackle on offense. This might be before your time. Ross, do you remember a quarterback named Fran Tarkington?
It's before my time, but a lot of folks, especially that grew up around here, remember Fran.
He could throw and run. He was quite an athlete and quite a quarterback, but Dick played, and we had a number of guys that got shots and played in the NFL. So that's kind of my background. I was a middle linebacker, started my junior and senior year, had an injury, a broken arm, where I missed four games, but came back and my junior year and finished out playing, and then started my senior year, and just have been a lifelong Bison fan. My parents were from Fargo, and they stayed there after the Korean War all the way through, and through the 90s were season ticket holders. And so Bison football is part and parcel to my life, and I'm very proud, one, to have played with them, but also to follow them as a fan.
So how did the Kickabout Bison football blog get started? What kind of inspired that?
Well, it was born out of some frustration in that what the Bison have done, no other team at any level has done at the collegiate level. And then we're much farther into it, and I just started it last year. And there was kind of a frustration of a lot of saying, why isn't more being looked at as to what are they doing that other people aren't doing? And how does this compare to what other FCS programs are doing? We're obviously having a greater amount of success. And so I'm also kind of a stat guru. A lot of times that will tell you really what a team is doing. There's a lot of different stats now, and I love the computer age. I mean, I was raised in a generation, no cell phones and no computers. The only thing you had for following sports was a raw print page, television and radio.
Yeah, for sure. And that's something, you know, that I kind of saw a gap or in the coverage here of really top-notch recruiting coverage. And that was sort of filled when, you know, Ryan Burns started Bison Report, and then analysis of the games, like really deep kind of X's and O's film type of stuff that I had done for the NFL for a long, long time. And that was something I think was unique to the market, was excellent recruiting coverage and sort of top-notch X's and O's stuff. And it's a reason that I think Bison Report has had the level of success that it's had, was, like you kind of mentioned, born out of a hole or something that you weren't seeing, you know, something that needed to be sort of not necessarily fixed, but introduced into the type of content that Bison fans can take in. So you've been following the program for this long. What were your thoughts kind of immediately when they discussed the transition to Division I?
Well, it was a necessity. And I'll fill you a little background. Back when I played, you had basically the college and the university division. The university were the big schools. And I'm not sure if you're aware of this, you could have 120 full scholarships back then for the big programs. And quite frankly, some of them just good stockpiled grief. Players. There was a third string fullback off of Michigan that went on to start in the NFL, and he hardly saw the field at Michigan. And I know that's the way it was. Now, the college division, where North Dakota State was at when I was there, we could have 60 full scholarships, and you could divvy them up. And it's kind of back to the future, because when Title IX, and I'm not speaking against or for or anything on Title IX, but when that came in, there was a shift away, and the FBS went to, and they didn't call it that, I'm not even, Division IA, it dropped to 95. Then they came up with Division 1, 2A, which is FCS, which is the 63 scholarships. Division II, which NDSU decided to stay in during that transition, was 45 scholarships. So there was a little bit of a transition of going from 60 to 45 scholarships. And it took a few years. There was some success. I really believe when Earhart left, that was one of the reasons why he left at that time. Because you're going from 60 to 45. And he'd have gone up anyways because he was a fantastically good coach and smart. You knew he had a future, you know, beyond Fargo. But in that loss of scholarships, we settled into, and you see the 80s, which I think, you know, very close to what we're doing now. There was excellent football being played at North Dakota State, national championships in a playoff setup. Then you see it going from 45 to 38. And then ultimately, and I think it's gone to 33. And so when it was going from 45 to 38, I was talking to the people that I know. I said, you just can't recruit enough good athletes to have a consistently good program. You know, that's going to be hard. And so when they brought in Bowl from Nebraska, and we were very fortunate because that was kind of a foofum. I'm forgetting the guy. He ended up at Akron. He was under the great coach there and was an assistant defensive coordinator. And they were going like 10-2 and 9-3. And boy, that wasn't good enough. And they got rid of him and Bowl and his staff. And boy, we were very fortunate, I think, to get a coach of that type of culture, because I think he understood the toughness, the type of players that could be recruited from rural areas. And let me just digress a little bit. Our recruiting base when I was playing and we had 60 scholarships was we got the best players out of North Dakota, very good players out of Minnesota, and very good players out of Wisconsin. Those three states were the lifeblood of those great Bison teams back in the 60s and 70s. And, you know, it stayed there, but that was getting weaker, you know, when the scholarship levels went down. Bowl came in and re-upped and got it focused. And as we say, the rest is history.
Yeah, absolutely. Certainly a, you know, massive shift in success, frankly. I was, you know, certainly growing up in the 90s and Bison football had some great years. The yep. Lamar Gordon, Chuck Clabo teams, but you know, they were getting beat by UND, not really competing for national championships, had some teams rated in the top 25 and sometimes even in the top 10. But you know, at this point, it's almost like a video game, just winning the championship every year, which you've mentioned is really not something that happens. I mean, whether you're talking about FCS, Division III, NAIA, NFL, you don't just win, you know, 7 of 8 championships and are in an excellent position to win again. This is truly rarefied air that North Dakota State is in. And there's some tenets of the program that you have extolled on our website and certainly on your own, but things that have been Bison football cornerstones from when you played until now. What is some of that? And also, if you don't mind, delve into some of the statistics that you really get into around this time of year.
First and foremost is we play defense at a level that no other colleges played over 50 years. That is just, you know, there's been small little lapses, but that is the biggest distinguishing differentiator over us and any other FCS team right now. And we, you know, some of the stats that go behind it is we've averaged over this last 8.5 years. Now it's full 9 years. And now we're into the you know, that playoff thing of going for another national championship. We've averaged giving up about 12 points a game and under 300 yards of total offense and about a buck, you know, 105 on running defense, rushing defense, and always between some place on 2 point, you know, six, that's the lowest I think it's been, to, you know, 2.9, 2.8, 3.3, 3.5 yards per carry in giving up. The next closest is a full touchdown more than that on points given up. There's nobody under 20 points in defense for that period of time. Now, we've evolved. I really believe we have the best offense in the country now as well, because it is so diverse and we can run. And but you asked for the tenets. The first one is, if you can't stop the other team from running, you ain't going to win a lot. And you get a lot of what I call them wingy-dingy teams. You know, they can move the ball between the 20s, but they can't punch it in when they get in the, inside the 20s. And when you can stop the other team on third and shorts and fourth and ones, you know, consistently, you're going to win a hell of a lot of ball games. Oops, sorry. Okay.
Ah, we're fine.
Yeah.
Pretty much only the one word you can't say on this show.
That is key, and that's what came out. I was looking, you know, okay, who else is close? Even JMU, the year that they beat us in 2016 in the semis, they averaged 348 yards a game in the low 20s in giving up. Now, they gelled, and by the end of the year, they were playing some real quality defense. But I even, on that, I look at it, we were hurt when, you know, when Tangway went down and then Steidel went down in the first quarter, and we didn't have Nick LaDuca, who's an NFL quality linebacker. That hurt us when we played them. You know, they had their best all-time running back, Abdullah, and it was tied 17-17 going into the fourth. It's also, in the year of statistics, the least point variance. We only scored 29.1 points a game in 2016. We gave up the most points that we've given over this whole string of 16.6 points a game. For some reason, we just couldn't put teams away that year. And I joke, and I don't know them personally and don't, but I used to joke the offensive coordinator, he had a Maserati, but he drove it like a Toyota. I thought there was more, you know, mileage to be had. And I think when Messingham came, he really upgraded that program, the offensive side of the thing, and the diversity in the passing and the sophistication of the passing and so forth. So the first tenet is, back when I played, God, if we gave up more than two touchdowns, we just felt like we let the program down. That's not acceptable. That's not Bison football. And boy, it is just wonderful to see that being played out today. We just play lights out defense every year. In fact, my preview for this year, I just went in and I said, okay, are we going to stop playing defense? Did we lose so many people? And we had some new people coming in, but they were good quality athletes and had a lot of experience. And I said, it's money in the bank. And we are now here. I said, this ain't going to change. When it comes in, and I have three standards of excellence, a team to be exceptional in defense has to be giving up under 325 total yards, total offense, under 125 rushing, and under 20 points in scoring. And I said, we will be there, and we'll be better. In fact, we won't vary much from our averages over this last 9 years. And here we are, another season in the books, another undefeated season, and that's still the biggest differentiator. Then the other one is, we've always have been able to effectively run the ball. And I think an enhancement of that is, when you go back through the years, it's 50 years of watching mobile quarterbacks. I can go back to Terry Hansen, Bruce Grisamke, even in the option stages in the 80s, the Arden Beaches, and I'm missing Chris Simdorns. I've seen some, and I think they're on your some of the Bison Report stuff, our Bison Report stuff, where you go back and look at some of the old film. We had, these guys weren't just running quarterbacks. They were very efficient and accurate in their passing and very timely. And so that's what differentiates. And that goes back to the recruiting philosophy. The first thing is you better be smart. That's been a frustration this year because we've had a few more penalties in a few games than we normally do. We usually play pretty clean. Though I think we're evolving again, I think, with the new offensive line coach. And I agree and appreciate it, is you don't stop blocking until whistle blows. And we're getting guys downfield at second and third level at a higher degree. And we've gotten a few penalties. I know one, there was one in one of the games, the chicken cornerback turned and ran, and Schoening got a penalty for it.
Yeah, that's... you know, he's doing such an excellent job, he being A.J. Blazek. I really appreciate the job that he's done. You lose guys like Volson and the young man that he lost on that offensive line to have to replace three starters last year and basically, you know, not miss a beat and kick to kick Zach Johnson inside and trust Cordell Volson, who's just been truly unbelievable. And you talk about stats, that's one of the, just really most impressive things about this whole season. And I did a 10 stats you kind of yep. wouldn't believe about North Dakota State football in 2019. 222 pass blocking snaps for those guys and a half a sack. And that was credited to Cordell. Dylan Radins had zero sacks. So they've been awesome. Coach Blazek has been awesome. Ron, I appreciate you having you on. We'll definitely have you on again. And right now what we're going to do before we run out of too much time is play that interview with myself and Bison quarterback Trey Lance.
You're with Bison freshman quarterback Trey Lance. Trey, how are you doing?
Doing good. How are you?
There basically hasn't been an award that you were eligible for that you haven't been named the recipient of. You know, that's come out so far. And somebody asked Coach Entz about that in the press conference. And he said, look, those things happen while we were on break. It's not something we have addressed. That kind of stuff has to feel good. But at the same time, you have a job to do on Saturday.
Yeah, absolutely. It's cool and everything. But at the same time, I'm honestly not worried about it at all. If we don't go 1-0 this week, all that stuff goes down the drain. So that's the main focus, 100% focus on, you know, winning this week and, you know, continuing – just keeping this thing rolling.
So this second season is kind of, obviously this entire year has been kind of first experiences for you. First game, first start, first road game, first conference game, first marker game, all these firsts. Now you have another one with the second season with the playoffs coming. Is this something where when you don't have maybe the guys in the quarterback room that have done it, where you might maybe reach out to Easton or just talk to even Cole or somebody that has been in the playoffs and kind of check into the differences?
Yeah, absolutely. I talked to, you know, Easton and even Brock and Carson a little bit. Nothing really changes from our standpoint. You know, we don't want to do too much. We don't want to, you know, everything's been going well. So, obviously, you know, the intensity ramps up in practice, intensity just mentally and physically. Things just get harder, get a little faster. I think we've been preparing for this, you know, for the last 12 weeks, so just excited to go out there and execute.
I'm going to give you a chance to do something you probably enjoy more than talking about yourself, and that's talking about your teammates. Was working with Coach Blazek a little bit to try and figure out some numbers, and they figure out of the 222-ish pass blocking snaps from your two starting tackles, they've given up a half a sack. How just mind-boggling is that number from Cordell and Dylan?
It's insane. And obviously, you know, people don't get to see how they come to work every single day. But that is a huge testament to just the kind of people they are on and off the field. Just how much love we have for each other. And just obviously that sack, they might be a little frustrated at me because I did run out of bounds at Illinois State for a sack. I thought I got back to the line of scrimmage, but turns out they didn't give it to me. So, you know, that one might be on me. But just even the sacks that, you know, the other guys have given up, it's more on me, I think, than on them for sure. I mean, they've been doing a great job. Just the focus that they have in practice, you know, the want to get better with Coach Blazek. Just big credit to him, just how detailed he is. Even when, you know, maybe they get frustrated or I get frustrated, you know, he's not going to, you know, back off at all. Just staying honest no matter what. So huge credit to them.
I would imagine going against Derek every day in practice doesn't hurt.
Yeah, that's it's a different type of beast right there. And Derek, just obviously he's the most disciplined person, honestly, I've ever met in my life. You know, like the not eating sugar thing. I don't know if you knew about that. But,
I didn't. But yeah, I'm going to have to ask him about that. He's next.
You should. Doesn't eat sugar. I mean, just goes to bed at 9 o'clock every night strictly. I mean, he's honestly the most disciplined person I've ever met. And just learned a lot from him just about maturity in general, not even just football, just in life.
I mean, they teach you guys. Obviously, Randy is one of the best quarterback coaches in the country, period. They teach you guys from when you first start playing quarterback, eyes downfield, don't watch the rush, eyes downfield. How much easier is that when you have the pass protection that you have?
Yeah, it's really easy to get comfortable when, you know, I'm dropping back and I don't even feel anyone. You know, defense I know talks a lot about just learning from Coach Enns talks a lot about just quarterback pressures, not even sacks. Right. Just, you know, just getting hit. Disruptions, getting even just touching me in the pocket after I throw, just trying to make me feel uncomfortable. And when those guys, you know, aren't stopping pass blocking until, you know, the whistle, it makes a huge difference.
How much does the run game correlate to what you guys are able to do in the pass game? Not even necessarily just strictly play action, but how much more do you think is available to you coverage-wise because you're able to run the ball basically 6 yards a carry every time you try?
Yeah, I think it definitely just limits defenses on what they can do against us. You know, you got to focus on A-gap power, you know, when you're scheming, you know, defensively for us. So that's, you know, you got to spend a lot of time on that. You know, it's not something that you can really take lightly or, you know, we're just going to keep using it. But I think it opens up a lot in the pass game just schematically wise. Just, you know, you can't do a lot different. You can't, you know, focus on, you know, changing a lot of things defensively. So most of the time, you know, we get one or two looks and, you know, those are like the main looks that we're going to get. We call it kind of the flavor of the day. For Saturday, so we're gonna wait and see what the flavor of the day, what the pressure of the day is on Saturday, and you know that's usually how it's been. Just the team sticking with that.
What is it about Jimmy on third down? Because I think people are really starting to notice that. But boy, he's tough as nails.
He is. He takes some hits, some serious hits. You know, his little body might not be able. You know, people might not be able to think he can take. But super confident dude, and just one of the hungriest dudes. You know, in that receiver room. And a huge credit to him. Just honestly, I get frustrated with him sometimes on the sidelines because he's always telling me, you know,
how open he is,
or not even that, but just wanting to do better. You know, he wants to, you know, maybe adjust his route a little bit on some of our concepts and stuff like that. And you know, I honestly have to tell him, you know, he communicates kind of through Zeb and Noah. So just, you know, their importance on the sideline is huge. They do a lot more than people think. But just things like that Jimmy just comes to work every day. Leader, I think he takes more reps than anyone at practice, honestly. And, you know, it might not seem like a big thing, but that's, you know, on your body, mentally and physically, you know, he really wants to get himself ready for every week.
Phoenix and Christian, I think, any level of expectations, and I wrote something about this as far as the number of catches they had last season and yards and touchdowns compared to what they did this season. Of course, that was going to happen when Shep and Dallas and Dez are not around anymore. But I would still have to say that they've exceeded expectations.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I had high expectations for them just because I, you know, I knew what they can do. And, you know, I still know what they can do, just continue to get better every single week. But, yeah, those dudes are playmakers, electric. I think that whole receiver room has a lot of talent, even more young talent, you know, that people thought, you know, this year was the young talent that we had. Even some true freshmen in there that really could play, Braylon Henderson, guys like that. You know, obviously we want to keep their four games right. Just to give them that opportunity, you know, to have even more catches the next 4 years of their career. But those dudes, I mean, I'm confident in those dudes that those dudes who go out and make plays.
Yeah, and I mean, that makes sense. You have such a deep group of weapons. And one group that I kind of wanted to talk about was the tight ends, because I feel like in the first four games of the season, that was the narrative. My God, Babich, Gindy, mm-hmm. Ben, the way that they're – deploying them, how is anybody ever going to match up? And then I think, and to their credit, and they've earned it, but the discussion is more about Christian and the beast that he's become. Could we maybe see the tight end slide back into the narrative during playoff season?
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, we can't forget about those guys, just how electric they are, just playmakers, you know, catching the ball, running the ball, and blocking. You know, I think they're the most dominant group, and detailed and disciplined group. That's credit to Coach Broll. That's his group of guys. The Chiefs, you know, tight ends, fullbacks, those dudes come to work every day with a different type of mentality than most people have.
Nichols comes in here this weekend, and I want to talk first off about, I think it's Lache, the nose tackle, 55.
Yep.
According to Ants, he's the leading sack guy active in FCS, 40-plus sacks during his career. What does it change about what you guys do, or just what does the interior pass rush threat, how is that different from most pass rush threats which come from the end? I feel like interior disruption is almost a little bit more effective.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, it'll be different a little bit, I think, because, you know, most of the best pass rushers we've seen this year have been at the DN position. Yeah. So it'll definitely be different. But I think the biggest thing will just be knowing where he's at. They do a great job up front, so, you know, I wouldn't say I have any concerns at all, just the way they've been going about their business, just how locked in they've been. But, yeah, he's a good player and definitely have to know where he's at.
Defensively on the outside, they've got long corners. They like to play a lot of man. Normally, teams aren't going to be able to play much more than man free, or you just run it down their throat. How much do you like your matchups if they really are going to try and cover Phoenix and Jimmy and specifically Christian man-to-man?
Yeah. Yeah, I have all the confidence in the world in those guys. So I think when a team comes in and wants to play man coverage, I think, you know, Colgate had a similar situation last year where, you know, they did what they did and they did it well. And I think that's similar to what we're going to get on Saturday. You know, if they do mix it up and want to go maybe a quarters look or three buzz, whatever, you know, we're prepared for the situations. But, you know, it's kind of just, like I said, we'll see what the flavor of the day is for them.
How important is the success running the ball, whether it's you or the backs, in opening up what you might be able to do outside against this team?
Yeah, we absolutely, you know, we want to have an efficient pass game, and it's all set up by the run. So just moving the ball on the ground would be big, like it is every single week. I think, you know, if we can't move the ball on the ground, we're going to have issues. So obviously teams are going to focus on that, trying to stop us. But schematically, I think Coach Roll, Coach Hedberg do a great job, Coach Larson with the running backs. And obviously that running back group is pretty special. You know, they find ways to make plays.
Back, receiver, tight end, whoever. Anybody that maybe we didn't see everything we could see out of them in the regular season that we should maybe keep an eye on in the playoffs?
Yeah, I saw a lot from a lot of guys. Dimitri will be back healthy, so that'll be big, obviously, for that room. You know, Hunter Lupke, saw a little flash of him getting some carries, which would be big. Not a lot of guys want to tackle that guy, 240 pounds coming at you. But, yeah, we'll see what happens. Kobe Johnson, Bussey will be healthy again, so those guys can be pretty electric. We'll see what happens.
What's the biggest thing you need to take care of on Saturday?
The ball.
The ball. Okay. Thank you.
All right. We want to thank Trey for his time. We certainly want to thank all of you guys for listening. We certainly appreciate that. Hey, folks, get to the Dome, get to the Shack this weekend, and go Bison.